And they run through our ass like shit through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
It's ridiculous that they do it. That was a huge colony. Well, we didn't miss it. It was, you know, the typical rah, 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 zip, boom, bah, boo.
You don't cuss. You don't drink. So what are your vices?
I have been known to chew a bit of tobacco when I get a little tired or watching film.
Hey, I'm Coach O. I just love my Hummer. I have my Hummer. You need a Hummer? Tell them about it, JoJo.
They've won the biggest championship, and that's the championship of life.
Gas control. Everybody just do your job. You understand that?
Welcome in to the latest episode of That SEC Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Breton. I go by SEC Mike on Twitter, and I'm joined as always by my cousin Shane, who goes by Big Orange Vols on Twitter. What are you up to, you big Tennessee homer?
Hey, buddy, what's going on?
Not much, Shane, but I've got a little bad news to share with you.
Uh-oh.
The Nathan Peterman experiment in Buffalo has come to an end.
Oh, God. You know, we didn't know which Nate Peterman was going to show up in the NFL. Was it the Tennessee Nate Peterman or was it the Pitt Nate Peterman? And apparently it's old big stage volunteer Nate Peterman.
I can't recall which game this was, Shane, but there was one apparently where I heard a stat. Had Peterman come out and just spiked the ball every series he was out there, mm-hmm. He would have had a higher quarterback rating than the one he played the damn game in.
Hey, you can't fault the man. He's trying to make something out of nothing. They literally have nothing up there for weapons, and their offensive line's garbage. Watch this. This would be like a New England Patriot experiment, so don't be surprised if, you know, somebody like that picks him up, you know, keeps him on the bench for a couple years and then trades him for some spots. So I don't think this is the last we've heard of him, but, I mean, those are pretty tough cards dealt up there in Buffalo.
All right, Shane, so let's get back into the SEC action. Of course, Peterman, he's a little SEC-related, so we felt that was on topic. But, you know, one thing we always like to do on our Tuesday show, the SEC announces on Monday, you know, the week ahead schedule. So we're obviously going into the week 12 schedule, but these are week 13 games. Sadly, this is going to be the last weekend of the regular season. And the SEC has announced all the kickoff times and broadcast information for all the games. So I'm going to just go through these, Shane, one by one, get your thoughts on them.
Okay.
Starting, and once again, this is obviously the last weekend of the season, rivalry weekend, so just about all these damn games are good, so this is going to be a fun weekend. But starting on Thanksgiving, Thursday, November 22nd, the Egg Bowl, Mississippi State at Ole Miss. That's going to be 7:30 Eastern time on ESPN. The following day there, Black Friday, Arkansas at Missouri, the 3:30 game there on CBS. Then we get into Saturday action, Georgia Tech at Georgia. That's going to be the noon game on SEC Network. Florida at Florida State. That's going to be the noon game on ABC. Auburn at Alabama. That's going to be the 3:30 game on CBS. Tennessee at Vandy. That's going to be the 4 o'clock game there on SEC Network. Kentucky at Louisville, 7 o'clock, ESPN2. South Carolina at Clemson, 7 o'clock on ESPN. And finally, one of my favorite, you know, new rivalries kind of here in the SEC, LSU at Texas A&M, 7:30 on SEC Network. Any thoughts on those games, Shane?
Dude, I love Thanksgiving. I mean, not only is it one of my favorite, probably the most overlooked holiday. I think Thanksgiving's right up there with Christmas. And part of it is not only you just stuffing your face, but you got football nonstop. And golly, this schedule, I love rivalry week. I mean, it's the best of the best. So I'm just kind of glad it's split up a little bit. So now that you can really enjoy most of the games this coming up week.
Yeah, and you got me thinking, Shane, on my other side of the family, I spent time with them last Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. My cousin Randy Breton, huge Mississippi State guy, is a Mississippi State grad. And I just remember shooting the shit with him last Thanksgiving, telling him, you know, from what I was hearing, Dan Mullen coming to Tennessee. And he's like, "You're full of shit. Dan Mullen will never leave Starkville." And that day was even better because he was so damn amped up for that Egg Bowl. If you remember, I think Mississippi State was like a 17-point favorite, something crazy. Mm-hmm. They ended up losing the damn game, thanks mostly to Nick Fitzgerald, unfortunately, getting hurt. But, yeah, that was a rough 48 hours for old Randy Brett.
Oh, Randy. Oh, man. But, I mean, there's so many good games. It's, I mean, Florida State, yeah, they're not the greatest. But when those two teams meet, it's exciting to watch. You know, is Auburn, you know, way underrated compared to Alabama? Yeah, probably. But they still play each other tough, and Auburn ended up winning last year. Tennessee Vandy, both teams probably playing for a bowl game in that one. I mean, this list goes on and on.
Georgia Tech, Georgia. I mean, for whatever damn reason, Tech plays Georgia well, so you just never know who's going to win that one. Like I said, LSU, Texas A&M, that's been really one-sided, but this one's in College Station, the first, obviously, game with Jimbo Fisher. You know, South Carolina, Clemson, that's always been a beat down here lately, but that is a hell of an intense rivalry, so you just never know with that one. I mean, even neither side wants to admit this is a rivalry, but I even enjoy these Arkansas-Missouri games because it seems like the damn better team always loses. So that game's even interesting. Hell, I'm excited for all these.
Yeah, me too, brother. I'm ready. And then when you compare it to this shitty week, you know, it's going to seem that much better too.
All right, Shane. So let's jump back into, obviously, the week ahead, week 12. And let's go around the league.
Now let's go around the league.
We haven't decided how we're going to play the guys, so, and I wouldn't tell you if I did. So, you know, I don't mind you asking a question, but I don't need to answer it.
No, I mean, I'll be whistling Rocky Top by the end of the week, all our play. I mean, it's just like, right? I mean, just hear it over and over, and, you know, like every other or every third song, it'll roll through within the crowd noise that we play at practice, so you just get used to it. And it's a catchy tune, right? I mean,
this game's going to be a street fight. This game's going to be a street fight. I mean, some of you guys don't know who Kimbo Slice is. Hopefully you do. And you go back to it, man, this isn't a sanctioned fight. This is a street fight. I mean, this is the SEC. So, man, it's time. It's time to put on the hard hat. Lunch bell. Let's get to work.
All right, Shane, starting in old Tuscaloosa.
Roll Tide!
Nick Saban, he met with the media on Monday, as always, and Saban got a little pissy. He was asked about playing some kind of reserves, and they didn't mention Tua necessarily when he was asked this, but he was asked about, you know, is this a game you kind of, you know, plan to play some of the freshmen, some of the younger players? You know, it's a side way of asking, you know, you're going to kick the shit out of Citadel. Are you going to empty your bench?
Uh-huh.
And old Nick Saban wasn't having that one.
You know, but we're not going to take the approach in any game that we play that we're not going to play players and take guys out and do all this and play somebody else and assume that the opponent that we're playing is not capable of being very competitive. You know, that can be your mindset. That's not my mindset. That's not our mindset. That's not going to be the mindset of our players. So, and I'm not really interested in any of your suggestions about how we should manage our team and what we should do to try to get better, regardless of what you think, just because we're playing the Citadel.
All right, Shane, so what in the hell's old Saban's problem here? I mean, I think Alabama could play with 8 or 9 guys on the field at once, and they're still going to beat Citadel. So why is he being like this?
It's so stupid. I mean, to sit there and act like Citadel can be competitive. You know, Citadel couldn't be competitive with your third team. So, I mean, it's just kind of a joke. I mean, we all know what's going to happen. And I think that the real question is how much does Tua play? Because they really do have an opportunity to let him get some rest, and that's what he needs right now. How far along is Jalen, do you know?
Yeah, he's not playing either. I mean, they may be able to play him in this one, but I don't know. Do you really want to risk Jalen's availability for the rest of the, you know, the playoff and the SEC championship game to get some reps in against Citadel? I think you just go Mac Jones the entire way. And, you know, from all accounts, he's serviceable.
Yeah.
I don't even think he needs to throw a damn pass in this game. And like you said, though, they're going to win by 4 touchdowns. So, just run him out there. And I think that's kind of what they were getting at. And he just got pissed off at the suggestion.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a joke. I mean, you should have known it was a joke when you scheduled this team. It's not like they were just going to all of a sudden jump up and be competitive, you know. But I am kind of curious how much playing time Tua gets this week. I'm pretty sure that if he is in there, you're going to probably see some max protect two tight ends or something like that, because the last thing Saban wants is anybody getting back there and touching the quarterback.
Well, speaking of Alabama, Shane, obviously I think the biggest storyline from their game last week in Mississippi State outside of the back-to-back shutouts was just kind of the terrible officiating. And I think even the most diehard Alabama fans, you know, they're probably tired of hearing it because they, you know, and rightfully so, they say they won 24-0. So a couple of bad calls didn't determine the outcome of this game, but definitely played somewhat of a factor. And one thing we kind of forgot to hit on the last show was the fact that Mississippi State did reach out to the SEC and wanted to just kind of discuss it with the head of officiating there, Steve Shaw, the SEC commissioner, Greg Sankey. And on Monday, the John Cohen, the AD there at Mississippi State, he revealed, you know, a little bit of his comments there that he had with the SEC. And you know, he kept it classy. He did not throw any refs under the bus. He did not throw the league under the bus. We don't have the audio clip here, but I'll read a little bit of what he had to say. This is comments from John Cohen. We're talking about human beings doing things well sometimes and then sometimes making mistakes. That's one of the compelling things of college football at the end of the day. I have so much confidence in our league and their ability to work through the things that make things right. There are unfortunate things that happen in our game. And again, I think some appropriate measures will be taken. And then he was also asked, you know, do you think the officials should be held accountable for missed calls? And here's Cohen's response. Yeah, I do believe there should be consequences. There are consequences, but it's just not as viewable as fans may want them to be, and that's for very specific reasons. So do you have any thoughts there, Shane, about what John Cohen, the Mississippi State AD, had to say after this one?
I mean, I've seen this in the past, and nothing ever comes out of it. So I just think it's all lip service right now. You know, officiating, I mean, I wouldn't want that job. And if you look at the one that called the penalty, I think he was the one that kind of had a bad angle. He was, you know, blocked by the player that looked like he was getting blocked in the back. So, obviously, he's calling that flag. It's the one that's in the back that should have said, you know, hey, wait, he pulled up, you know, waved the flag off. So, maybe they could take something away from that. Maybe they can, I don't know. I mean, if they're on their toes, especially – because Alabama games have been criticized for several weeks now, especially with officiating. So maybe this next crew that comes in, that they come in a little more dialed in and stop making, you know, some bonehead calls here.
Yeah, Shane, because the last thing Citadel needs is for a couple calls to go against them.
Oh, geez. Citadel. Is this one even on TV, or you got stream it on Hulu or something?
I think it's on SEC. It's either SEC Network or SEC Network Plus, but outside of diehard Alabama fans, I don't know who in the hell is going to be watching this one.
The Iron Bowl, is it in Auburn or in Alabama?
It's at Alabama this year.
Oh, okay. I was just curious. Maybe we saw a lot of seniors or something like that, but they're going to save that for next week.
All right, Shade. So let's jump to Athens, where we had quite a bit of scheduling news here. For just a typical Monday, I thought this was pretty awesome. I know you'll appreciate a lot of these, but first, Clemson, Georgia. You know, that's already been somewhat in the news that the two teams were going to face off. I think it was a couple weeks ago or months ago. I can't recall, but they are going to meet in 2024 in Atlanta. So a neutral site matchup, which I know you're not that big on. However, they scheduled it in a specific way to where, yes, they will meet in Atlanta, but they are going to follow that up with a home and home. And it's going to be 2029. That'll be in Clemson. 2030, the following year, it's going to be at Georgia. So that's a hell of a series there for Georgia and Clemson. And then even more, Georgia and Texas announced a series on Monday. And that's going to be the 2028 season. That's going to be, I believe that's going to be in Texas. And then 2029, Georgia is going to host Texas the following year. That means in 2029, Georgia is going to be playing Clemson, Texas, Georgia Tech, and the SEC schedule. So I know that's fucking, you know, the guys that are recruiting may not be born yet, but that's going to be a hell of a schedule for those guys.
Yeah, dude. I'm telling you what, I, as a football fan, I love this. I love seeing, I would love to see Georgia and Clemson face off. But let me ask you, as a Georgia fan, how are you feeling about this? Because, I mean, here we got Bama playing Citadel. They're not going to lose this thing. A game like, I mean, if you got Texas and Clemson, I mean, there's a good opportunity that you may go undefeated in the SEC and still not make a playoff.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting note because, yeah, and you also got to consider this. I mean, there's talk of, I don't think from the SEC, but around the nation that, you know, the SEC needs to go to 9 games conference scheduling. And that may gain traction by 2029. Obviously, that's so far out. But
yeah,
and for the simple fact that I understand why the SEC does 8 conference games for the terms of, you know, trying to make the college football playoff and having all these teams ranked. It's the smartest strategy out there, and that's why the ACC does it as well. And the ACC and the SEC always have teams in the playoff. And here lately, they've always had teams in the damn championship game. It's that's due in part to that. But I think as we go into the future and more people stop paying for cable and they, and you know, like we're mocking this Alabama Citadel game, no one is watching that. I mean, you could just go around Georgia, UMass, who in the hell's watching that? Kentucky, Middle Tennessee, I can go on and on. The more games you put out like that, the fewer people are going to be watching. So there may come a time when they're forced to add conference games. And if that happens by, like I said, 2029, you're talking about 9 SEC games for Georgia, Texas, Clemson, Georgia Tech. That's a fucking brutal schedule right there.
Yeah, for sure, man. I mean, I would really like to see, and I don't want to go too far down this rabbit hole because that's what the offseason's for, but I would love to see in like 2030 that every you know, conference be at, you know, 14 or 16 or whatever and play 10 SEC opponents. I think that would be really cool, a 10-conference game. And then the other two can be someone like, you know, you have to pick 2 teams from the ACC this year or something like that. And it just rotates. The next year we'll be playing the Big Ten or something like that. That's what I would like to see. And then that way, you know, we're not so focused on big teams like Clemson and Georgia and Texas. Some of these other schools aren't getting the love and they deserve. So if they did something like that and we could start some sort of rotation, I think that would be cool too.
So, Shane, like I said, Georgia's playing UMass this week. I'm not going to spend a lot of time breaking that down here because what the hell is the point? But Kirby Smart did meet with the media on Monday, and he was asked about, you know, these future games and, you know, who in the hell knows if he's going to be the coach. You know, as long as he keeps winning, he will be by these by this time. But I thought he had some interesting comments on just what he thinks of scheduling these big-time opponents. And, you know, even he's got an eye towards the college football playoff committee. So let's jump into these.
I think when you come to University of Georgia, it's you want to play against the best. And I've always believed in playing, you know, Power 5 opponents. I mean, look, our fan base will follow us anywhere. They want to go. We proved that last year. We've proven that over the history of time that the Georgia people will travel. They want great games. They want home and homes. And that as a coach, and I know going out recruiting, it helps. The CFP's proven that they want strength of schedule. They want you to play good opponents. Who knows what the system will be 10 years from now. It certainly could all change, but I would argue that the better schedule you play and the better teams you play against, the more rewarding it'll be 10 years from now. I know 10 years ago from today, nobody thought we'd be where we were, and there's some teams that probably could have done benefited themselves by playing a tougher schedule. And to go out and get these two teams in the same year, you know, it's you want to come to Georgia, you want to play against the best. That's what we want to build. We want kids that want to play against the best. So I'm excited for it, and we've been looking at a lot of other opportunities as well.
Okay, Shane. So like I said, Kirby's got, he's already got his eye kind of towards the playoff committee and all that, and I really like that he included the fans here. And just because, like I said, you got to throw your fans a bone, particularly when they're as rabid as Georgia fans. You know, it seems like every damn road game Georgia plays in, half the damn crowd is red. So fans will travel. They'll go to these games. And this is almost like bowl games during the season where, hell, the Georgia fans make a trip to Clemson, make a trip to Austin. That's a hell of a town. What are your thoughts on these comments?
He's saying the right words, man. He's you know, Kirby's always thinking about the future. That's probably one of the reasons why he's such a hell of a recruiter down there. But I don't know, man. I just, when you schedule games like this, think about it. If they played Clemson week one, you know, Georgia wasn't, I think Georgia has gotten better over the season. And if they were to play a team like Clemson week one, and who knows, let's say they lost it and then they lose to LSU. Well, now here they are in the SEC championship playing Bama. If they win, there's still a good shot they're not going in the playoffs. Now, did the fans have a great time watching that Clemson game? Absolutely. But if I'm a fan of Georgia, I'd rather watch the Clemson game in a playoff.
Yeah, I think I see what you're saying there. But kind of like what Kirby's saying, what we've seen from the College Football Playoff Committee, like let's take Michigan, for example, this year. Their only loss is in a non-conference game to Notre Dame. And that's not really being held against them. So if you have a quality loss, you know, we've seen it with LSU. LSU's got two losses.
Yeah.
They're higher than a lot of one-loss teams. And they're high because of who they've lost to and who they've beaten. So it certainly does seem that, you know, playing these games against damn Citadel is not going to help Alabama. But playing these games potentially does help Georgia. If they drop an SEC game or a non-conference game, I don't think it kills their playoff hopes.
Yeah, no, I don't either. And again, we're talking so long away. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is – one of the games scheduled is, I think, 12 years. I think that's the Clemson game was 2030, right?
Clemson's trip to Georgia is at 2030, yeah.
Okay, so that's God, I'm terrible at math. That's 12 years, right?
Yeah, yep.
It's getting late, Mike. Get the calculator on me. But I do know this, that 12 years ago, Clemson Tigers were 8-5, and Tommy Bowden was the head coach. So, you know, you're talking about several years down the road. We don't know what's going to happen. Who knows? The Dabo could be coaching Georgia.
Okay, Shane, before we go too far down that rabbit hole, let's jump to Gainesville, where old Felipe Franks, you know, he had some pretty interesting comments here on Monday. You know, for all the shit he's getting from Florida fans down there, it sounds like that may have lit a fire under his ass. And I thought no, you know, play represented that better than the final play there, of his final touchdown to put Georgia, or excuse me, Florida up for good, 31-28 in that one. And he said it came as a result of him not knowing what play they were supposed to be running. He just took over. So here's old Felipe on what he had to do here. And I thought this was pretty cool.
Because we had already gotten a huddle. So I was like, well, time's running down anyway. So I was like, let me look at my wristband and kind of see like what plays we had at our goal line package. I was like, eh. It was like, okay, one with the running back, one passing it. There's one where you can run it. So I was like, all right, let me get the one where I can run it. So, to be honest with you, I didn't even see the last call on the fourth down. I was like, he'll probably get mad at me if I don't get it. But I was like, you know, I have confidence I will. So, just called it.
All right, Shane, what are your thoughts on Felipe Franks just going beast mode and just saying, hell, I'll just give me the ball and I'll put it in there?
Honestly, Mike, I hate it. I mean, I just, what if this didn't work? I mean, you got Felipe over here hushing the crowd, you know, and you got, you know, he clearly says there, I don't care what he says. I mean, is that what you want to say about your head coach? I mean, just, you know, Franks is about to he wouldn't have been playing Saturday if Trask didn't get hurt. Mm-hmm. And then here you are at the end of the fourth quarter going for it on fourth down from the 1 yard line. And what if he made a mistake? What if he picked the wrong play? Or what if Dan had something perfectly lined up because he does hours and hours of research? on these teams in these situations. And I mean, this really could have backfired and could have created even more controversy in that locker room if it didn't already, because Dan's going to say, oh man, that's great. Frank's called his own play. He couldn't see me, you know, but I don't want that. I want Frank calling a damn timeout, come to the sideline and figure out what the play is. You know, I don't want him just, you know, he's not Brett Favre. So
I don't know, Shane, I'm going to take the different approach here, because sometimes you just want your guys to be out there and emotional. And, you know, I think you've kind of hit on this all season long. Frank's maybe a guy that, I don't want to say doesn't care, but it's just like, I don't think it rules his life. I don't think it rules his head, you know. But yeah, sometimes those players, like Peyton Manning, I think is the perfect example. Hell of a player, maybe the best player in Tennessee history, but he couldn't beat Florida. And I think because it got in his damn head, and he was always checking plays and like analyzing every damn situation. Whereas Frank's is like the complete opposite. He's not thinking about anything, man. He's just like, give me the ball and I'll do it. You know what I mean? Sometimes you need that. Obviously, I don't think they're going to go very far with that strategy, but to beat South Carolina at home in a damn game where the fans are booing your ass and they want you benched, they probably want this guy hurt. I mean, They probably do, if they're being honest. So they get Emory Jones out there, and he just said, give me the ball. I'll take it. I got no problem with this. And I think it shows a lot of, while there is plenty of negatives to Felipe Franks, I think this is one of the huge positives. It's just his passion and energy, and it can be used wrong for sure, like you're saying, but here it paid off, and it paid off big time for Florida.
Yeah, no. But Dan gets paid millions of dollars to pick plays. I'm just saying, what if he's looking out there, it's fourth and one, he says, oh, God, you know, I could just see on the side. Every time they do this, fourth and one, they put goal line, they crash down, a bootleg would be perfect, would win the game, and he thought a quarterback sneak would be the right move. But Dan knows the right move, but he just couldn't find your head coach on the sideline. So do they not have mics in their helmets, or is that the NFL? I don't know.
That's only NFL.
Well, they need to put one in Frank's, because if he would have messed up there, I mean, that would have just been the end. There would be a fight in the locker room.
Well, speaking of another coach that gets pretty fiery, and I could see him fighting in the locker room, your boy Jeremy Pruitt. He was on Paul Feinbaum's show on Monday, and you know, before he jumped on, old Paul was discussing the fact that, you know, Jeremy Pruitt has put himself in conversation for SEC Coach of the Year. Feinbaum said that, you know, I think he said Orgeron, Mark Stoops, Jeremy Pruitt, those would be his top three right now. And here's what old Pruitt had to say. He wasn't buying into that talk.
Well, I can tell you this. I hadn't played one down. And it takes a lot more than one person to go into having success each and every week. I think we got a fantastic staff, a great support staff, good administration. We have everything we need here to have success. Our players are buying into what we're trying to get done. We're trying to create the right habits. And we've got a very young football team. You know, I think Madre London and Keller Christ are the only seniors on offense. We're playing four or five juniors, so we're playing a lot of freshmen and sophomores offensively. And, you know, we've taken our lumps some weeks, but they continue to come back each week to work hard to improve. And, you know, if we can recruit us some good guys to go with what we got here, we got a chance down the road.
All right, Shane, so you like this attitude from old Pruitt? He's not wanting any credit for Tennessee's winning here.
I can tell you one thing. I ain't played one down, Mike. I don't know, man. He's shown a lot of excitement on that sideline, kicking boards and grabbing players and stuff. So I think he could get in there for a couple series. But he's got to be up there. I mean, you're talking about Tennessee Vols. And I hate to bring up last year, but we did not win one SEC game. Mm-hmm. And now we're knocking on the door with the same players. I mean, pretty much 90% of the same players that was on this roster last year, and potentially making a bowl game. So that's what you want from your coach. Yeah, when I see these awards going out, I think it's stupid, especially if it goes to – no offense to Saban. Saban's on a t- totally different playing level, but so is his players. Mm-hmm. So to give him the best coach award, I think that's stupid. You take somebody that has a like Stoops. If he would have won, I think if he wins out, he's still going to win this thing. But you take a team like Kentucky that no one was expecting, and you elevate their play by your calling. That's what makes you a great coach. So I like the three that are in the running. I think that's the perfect three.
So you're buying Jeremy Pruitt right now, but what if he loses or Tennessee loses this Missouri game? Would you still consider him?
If he drops both of these next two games, then I wouldn't. But if he gets to a bowl and maybe even wins that thing, yeah, I could see it. It really depends for me on what Stoops does. And if Stoops, you know, if he fires Kentucky back up and then they win out, then no question, that's my man for Coach of the Year.
And you're going to leave Chad Morris off your ballot?
Nah, he wins the Creighton Award, Mike.
All right, speaking of Chad Morris, I thought this was a kind of a really interesting comment here, not from the Arkansas coach, but his defensive coordinator, of course, John Chavis. Who's a guy, you know, heading into the year, I threw out the stat. He's been a defensive coordinator longer in the SEC than every single defensive coordinator, all the other 13 teams combined. This son of a bitch has been doing it a long time, Shane. And he was asked, so I kind of didn't put this together till I heard this, but when he went to Arkansas, he signed basically a two-year deal, but it's his option to come back or not next year, which is really weird to me. But he was asked about that. Just, you know, has he made a decision? Has he told Chad Morris? And so here's Chief on what his plans are moving forward.
Yeah, I haven't told Chad that, but he and I will have a talk. But and I'm not going to make an announcement, but I'm at Arkansas. And I think that's enough said. And plan on being here a while.
All right, Shane, I mean, I don't really understand what the hell he's talking about here. He said he's not necessarily made the decision or not at least told Chad Morris, but he said he's there and he plans on being there. What do you make of these comments?
I think the Chief's gone, man. I think he's checked out, and this is something you say here at the end that, you know, Chief's never been a big recruiter. And, you know, Morris loves that side. And maybe he has an opportunity to get somebody in there that can not only do defense but can, you know, recruit to the next level. I'm not saying Chief can't. It's just it's never been his forte. And I don't know, man. He's getting up there, brother. He's getting up there in age, and it may be time, because is that your future? I mean, Morris is trying to build something down there, create a new winning environment, and this rebuild may take 4 or 5 years. And if that's the case, and you look up there or over there on the sideline at your defensive coordinator, do you really think it's Chief?
I don't know, Shane. I'm going to have to disagree with you on a couple of these points, because from what I know, John Chavis is a pretty solid recruiter. Obviously, they don't have much talent there at Arkansas, but that's not his issue. He was able to recruit at A&M. He was able to recruit at LSU. He's obviously able to recruit at Tennessee. And, yeah, his better days are behind him. But, you know, from what I've seen of this Razorback defense, they've had, you know, some solid performances. They were, if you want to talk about how bad they were this year, they were dreadful on defense last year. And I think the year before, if I recall, yeah, the last 2 years, I mean, they've just been awful. And I think he's improved that team, but it's hard to tell because most of the damn time the offense is not doing anything, and he doesn't have much depth. He does have a couple solid players, but they keep getting hurt. I just don't see Chavis as a guy that's like gonna come down there for 1 year unless he's totally over, like, in over his head, and I certainly don't think that's the case. And I just don't think he's the guy that's gonna be one and done. I think he is going to, like you're saying, you did make some good points. He's not the long-term answer, obviously, but I think he's going to be there 2 to 4, maybe even 5 years to just kind of get that thing going and solidify the defense before Chad Morris can hire in someone that's maybe like you're saying, a recruiter, because here's one thing where this marriage never made a ton of sense to me. Chad Morris wants to go fast. He wants to have tons of snaps. He wants his guys running all over the field. And the John Chavis defense, they, like most defenses, I'll give you that, but most defenses do not want to be on the field for that many snaps. They want to limit that. So he fits more with a ball control offense, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
So the long-term marriage doesn't make a lot of sense, but having that stability of just knowing the SEC, the entire SEC, not just the SEC West, I think John Chavis is a huge asset for Chad Morris. I think he desperately wants Chief back. And I don't think they, like you're saying, maybe he's not a good recruiter. I don't think they have a top class like this without John Chavis. I think he brings, from all the defensive players they got there, they seem to all really want to play for this guy.
Yeah, I mean, just from his, even the old days at Tennessee, I've always heard that Chavis was never big in recruiting, didn't like doing it. I mean, wasn't known as like an ace recruiter at any university he's ever been to. But, you know, the thing about it, you kind of hit some good points there. He is stable. He has been at the top. He has been at the bottom. He's been in rebuilds. He's done it all. And he's a good tool for Morris down there. And I don't know. I'm kind of curious about this contract, just the way he handled the questioning, but maybe he just wasn't expecting it.
Yeah, and it was weird, but I wonder if he just seems so old school to me. He's like, we're in the middle of the damn year. I don't talk contracts. You know, I'm hunkered down here trying to everything I can to beat Mississippi State and beat Missouri, and then when that's over, then we'll get into that. That's could be where he was going, but it was just very weird how he did answer that.
Yeah.
Okay, final thing I've got here, Shane. I thought this was a really interesting note. Let's jump to College Station. Jimbo Fisher met with the media on Monday.
Giga Mag.
And I never heard of anything quite like this, but it kind of made sense once he laid it out. But the Aggies are going to hold their senior night against UAB on Saturday. And why that's kind of odd is, keep in mind, their final game is also at home against LSU. And Jimbo Fisher was just asked, what in the hell is going on there? So here's what the A&M coach had to say.
Well, I think that's an elective thing to do either way. It's the last home game and how you want to do it. And I guess that's why they wanted to do it here, and I don't have a problem with it. I did it at Florida State that way. I watched one time on a situation where it was a Florida State game. And I watched one of our players who was a phenomenal player whose family was going through some really trials and tribulations with health with one of their – I'm not going to mention who it was. And I watched him see her for the first time in a long time that year because they went through some serious chemotherapy and things like that. And I watched emotionally how he got, and it was just such a huge rivalry game. And I think you add the rivalry to it and all those types of things and the emotion of a last home game and things. I elected back then to make the adjustment to the next last home game just to take some pressure off rivalry games, which LSU and us is a huge rivalry game, in my opinion, one of them here. And I think it's still a senior day, still, you know, recognizing all the greatness you've had here. So it was something I did back then, but their election to do it here was they were doing it, and that's fine with me. That was not my call. I mean, that was what they had done.
All right, Shane, first of all, have you ever heard of, you know, senior day on the next to last home game? And what are your thoughts on the fact that Jimbo, this is kind of what he likes to do?
I've never heard this, and I'm just kind of stuck. I don't know if this is just an excellent move by Jim, like this is next level coaching, because a lot of people are talking about UAB possibly being a sneaky good team. I mean, they're 9-1, I mean, some polls got them top 25. So maybe Jimbo's like, maybe if we do it this way, then UAB's all of a sudden a significant game because it's the last time the seniors are there. And then the LSU is obviously a big game because it's the Tigers. So to say that would, you know, change a game outcome, we've seen it do the opposite. The Purdue game with Tyler Trent up there, you know, when they played Ohio State, I think that was the part of the factor of them winning. And so I don't know. I just think that this is more about Jimbo just trying to one up everybody and make this UAB game even more important so that they don't overlook them.
You know, one thing, Shane, on this Texas A&M UAB game, we did not have an opening line when we recorded on Sunday. There is an opening line now. Keep in mind, UAB is a top 25 team. Like you said, 9-1 on the season.
Mm-hmm.
Texas A&M at home, 15-point favorite over UAB. And like Jimbo said, they're one of the best defenses in the nation. You know, I kind of chuckled at that, but then I looked. They've got number one, I think, rushing defense, number one scoring defense in their league. They're number one in the nation on third down defense. I mean, they are like legitimately top five defense. This is going to be an interesting game, considering you got to think this is like the damn Super Bowl for UAB.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Let me ask you, if UAB pulls off this upset and beats Texas A&M, not saying that they are, but let's say they do, are they now the second best team in Alabama?
Not only that, Shane, they would be, but there's always a group of five team that goes to the New Year Six, whatever.
Yeah.
If for some reason UCF gets knocked off,
yeah,
that team's going to become UAB with a win over Texas A&M. I guarantee it.
Oh yeah.
So they got a hell of a lot to play for.
You know, all I want for Christmas is UCF to make the playoffs. I just want to end it. I want them to stop talking. Just wreck it all.
Alabama 1 seed, UCF 4 seed. How much would you pay to watch that, Shane?
Oh, I'd pay $100. I really would. I would, just to hear. Maybe not that much. Maybe a little less. But I guarantee if you're a Bama fan, you'd probably pay it just so you don't have to hear this split national championship thing anymore.
All right, Shane. I think that's a good note to go out on. You got anything before we jump off here?
Yeah, buddy. Appreciate everybody taking the time to hang out with us today. And those that got on iTunes, we had a couple of ghost reviews. And if you do post a review, for some reason it takes a couple of days to get up there. So I appreciate everybody taking the time to do that. And again, you can always check us out on the Reddit page. We'll be cranking that thing up Saturday. That's that SEC podcast. And don't forget, tomorrow you'll be listening to this. What is tomorrow? Wednesday?
Tuesday.
Oh, man. Hey, bear with me. So the following day, we will not have a podcast. I'm traveling to, they moved it. It was in Memphis. They moved it down to Tunica. So I'm going to be down in Tunica tomorrow.
We're trying to figure out what the hell's going on with them refs, Shane.
That's right. Me and Morris going to meet at the Waffle House.
All right, Shane, thanks for joining me. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. We really appreciate it. We'll catch you on the next one, which will be hitting on a Thursday.
All right. See you guys. Go Vols.